Thanks, Greg. Yes, we're backstage with soloist Nikolai Shep-Snyder. Bravo.
Thank you.
Wow, that concerto is magnificent. It's passionate and tender and virtuosic and not performed very often.
It's not. It's about, we were jokingly talking with Stéphane Deneuve that if it had been 10 minutes shorter, it would have been played much more often. And I think it's true. It's a difficult piece to program for conductors, and it's very, very difficult for orchestra, for conductors. And it's a very own language, but incredibly, I think, accessible, actually, to the audience. I think they, everywhere I take it, it seems to be something that people understand, because it's very personal. Elgar really invests and put his own self in every piece.
So he has, at the beginning of the score, herein lies the soul of Five Dots.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of speculation as to who he actually was referring
to. Elgar loved speculation. It seems clear that a lot of hidden messages and hidden quotes from other pieces and hidden motifs that to him was describing a person in a, as in a leitmotif in a Wagner opera, you know, a specific phrase would hint at a person in his life.
What's been your experience with this concerto? When did you first play it?
My first experience was listening to it when I just arrived in New York to study. I was very young, maybe 17. And I remember it was Pinchas Zukerman playing Kurt Mazur, I think, if I remember correctly, conducting in New York. And that was just sort of the first experience I had with it. And I loved it from a distance, but never came around to playing it until I started working with the great English conductor, Sir Colin Davis. And around the same time, the violin that I played came to me. And one of the things that we found out, besides knowing that it was the violin of Fritz Kreisler, on which he played all his concerts and recording within a sort of 16-year period, and what we know is that he premiered the Elgar Concerto on that. So I thought, well, I have to play the Elgar. So that was a final thing to make me program it.
It really has personal significance. Can you describe your violin? It was created in 1741, I understand, a long time ago, and when violin makers probably didn't anticipate the kind of concert halls we have now.
Yeah, I find that infinitely fascinating that, in fact, these instruments were built at a time when a concert hall was what we today would call a sort of large room, maybe, when orchestras consisted of rarely more than 20-something players, when the music performed had a completely different sound. I mean, the pitch was different. Everything was different from what we imagine today, what we hear today. And yet, come 120, 30, 40, 50 years later, after the violin was made, and it's still the best, most suited instruments to play the music that was written in the 19th and 20th century. I find that extraordinary. And as you say, in concert halls today that are 10 times bigger than what they even knew they had at the time. Yeah.
It's sort of amazing that the instrument has stood the test of time.
Yes, it's very humbling in a way, you know. It makes me feel like very privileged to be part of its journey, you know, because I'm only a short part of its journey. And hopefully it will go on to have a very illustrious life. And it truly feels like a privilege to be one little part of that.
The concerto itself, I mean, you've played it, you've recorded it. Are there any particular parts that you continue to experiment with and play with?
Oh, I always. I mean, for me, music performance is like that. What it comes down to me is narration. We're telling a story, we're speaking. And as anyone can imagine, if somebody reads prose or poetry, drama, an actor can deliver the same lines. The words stay the same, but the inflection can be very different, depending on how you say it, what the mood is, the speed of the sentences before, etc. And that's nothing different in music. And so therefore, to answer your question, music performance is like that. It's always looking for a different way to say the same thing.
Well, you have an interesting perspective because you're both a soloist and a conductor, and sometimes both at once. How did that come to be?
Well, I love music so much that I couldn't imagine only making music in one way. I love to play. It's still my first musical language, of course. But simply, I at one point, 13 years ago, I think, that I said, oh, I have to conduct this. Too many works. I mean, that process had begun maybe 5 years before that. And then I finally started 13 years ago. So, yeah, it was just an inevitable addition to what I was already doing. And I don't see, people often ask, so do you feel like a violinist or do you feel like a conductor? How does it work? I don't think about it that way. I feel like a musician who sometimes plays and sometimes, you know, conducts.
Was there a particular piece of music when you were growing up that made you feel drawn to music, either as a violinist or as a conductor?
Well, a couple of sort of very important moments. I remember as a very young boy listening to Itzhak Perlman play. That was made an enormous impression on me. I remember listening to all the Wagner. It came, all the Ring came on TV, and I watched it all 16 hours. And then I fell in love as a sort of teenager. I fell in love with some of, you know, the Brahms symphonies and that. But I started discovering the symphonic repertoire was in my late teens, early 20s. But I do remember the one performance that I was listening to, one actually week of rehearsals that I was listening to in Ravinia with the Chicago Symphony, where they rehearsed and performed The Marriage of Figaro by Mozart. And I remember thinking, my God, I have to do that. And that actually, this is back in 2004, so it's 15 years ago. And that was the point when I said, I have to conduct. So there was those sort of, I still remember those moments.
And you say Colin Davis was your mentor. Was there one major impression that he gave to you?
Well, so many, really. And he, and his wisdom still come to me. I'm still learning from him, even though he's no longer been with us for 6 years. But he would be, first of all, I guess if there's one thing, it's humility and kindness. He arrived to a point in his own development where he allowed himself to be, and in a way that makes you vulnerable. On the other hand, it shows an incredible strength to allow yourself to be that vulnerable and kind whilst having a job with such influence as he did have. And the humility in front of, never to forget the humility in front of the masterpieces that we are allowed to perform. We feel like we're custodians, no, or whatever we are, as performers. We get to have intimate relationships with these incredible masterpieces that are so far beyond what we'll ever be able to achieve. And I think that's is vital for us to remember. We'll never even be close to good enough for the music that we perform.
Wow. Well, I understand you're also passionate about encouraging the next generation.
Yeah, I mean, look, at a certain point, you have to stop the navel-gazing, you know, and not navel, not as in ships on the ocean, but kind of being obsessed with yourself. It's important to pass on some of the things, the insights that I felt I've gained, some of the impulses I've received from great musicians no longer with us, to be able to share that with the next generation. I feel like it's almost like we're all on the same path. We're always all looking for the same thing. Some of us are further ahead. That's usually by age, because of experience and have been more years on this planet. But we're all trying to go on the same road, you know, towards a betterment and enlightenment and so forth. And I love to share what the things I've learned with the next generation.
What role do you think music has in our culture today?
Well, how long do we have? I mean, that's an enormous question, and it's a question that I don't think it's been answered yet, but it's a question we need to ask ourselves. It's a question that every music institution needs to ask. What is our place? Because 100 years ago, it was enough to play concerts, and people would come because they knew that you went to see concerts. Today, it's slightly different. There's definitely a musical institution has an educational obligation. It has an obligation to help shape and form and create the new audiences. This was not the case before. So I think music has the place that we give it. And that means what we as musicians, the entire, what you want to call music business or music industry, by that I mean all the musical institutions, the managements, the politicians involved with culture. It's whatever we are able to convince the people who decide what's put on to put on. If we can make it an essential part of society, which my dream, my wish, biggest desire, I think that would be incredible. I want everybody to understand that music, it's not a luxury. It's not something for the elite few. Music is something that, in a way, very few art forms can do, expresses the yearning and aspirations of mankind. And it does so in a way that is incredibly enriching for the people listening. It reminds us, there's so many practical things it reminds us, but at the end of the day, it's hard to explain to somebody why they should go here and not to see a movie or that. You know, there's no rational explanation, but what we can do is to show them the magic of music. And I think once you show them people the magic of music at a young enough age, this is where the education comes into the picture, I think then we don't need to defend music later on, and then it will have the place that it deserves.
So when you were talking about encouraging the next generation, we were talking about people going into music, but also people generally being able to enrich their lives with music.
Absolutely. First of all, for a young child, there are a lot of extracurricular activities. Now, I think music should be curricular between us. And, well, actually not between us. but it's one of the few things that teaches, because a lot of things you learn from as a child, right? You can play sports, you can play in a team sport, you can play in a solo sport that teaches you different things. But it's one of the few things where you actually won't succeed if you don't work on your own in between the lessons. So you cannot just go to training and then not really think about it or go for a run or something, then go to the next. That doesn't work. You have a lesson. But if you don't practice and implement the things, that's hard for a young person. Don't forget, you have to start when you're 6, 7, 8. It's hard for a young person to grasp, but those are the lessons. You can structure a child's brain to think that way and to be able to work that way and to be able to concentrate. Then whatever they end up doing as an adult, they have learned something incredibly and valuable from having played music. But beyond that, I think it goes beyond that. You know, I think it's about the emotional richness of our lives. And I think nothing is a symptom of health as arts in a society. The moment arts die is the moment and we've seen that in history, is the moment that empires fall.
Right. And music isn't really separate from life. It's an expression of life.
Bravo. It's exactly what it is. Music mirrors life like almost no other art form, because it's ephemeral, because it ceases to exist the moment. It's just like life, isn't it? You just have it, and then it's gone.
Yeah.
And it will never return the same way. It's the same way you have human beings, and then we pass away and somebody else comes. And yes, that's another human being, but it's not the same. And a life can never be replicated. It has that relationship with time. And I think that gives it an inherent, also tragic in a way. No, it gives it a tragic element, but it gives it a very human element that I think everybody responds to. What we have to make sure is that we afford the people who are not used to going to concerts, we help them to prepare them to be ready to receive the music and help them to actually be able to access this music. Whatever way it is, and in every city there are different ideas and projects that will help, especially children, because I think the secret is children. It's too difficult to get into when you're grown up. It's something that you need to have a love for already, because at the end of the day, as most great things are, they need to be driven by an impulse, and that impulse has to be emotional.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you very much.
When you're not making music, what kind of things do you like to do? And do you by any chance like to bicycle?
That's funny you mention it, because I mean, lots of things I like. I like to play a little bit of soccer. I like to read. I don't have so much time now as I used to do. I love to spend time with my children as much as I can. But we did briefly before talk about the story. You asked me if I like bicycling on mountains, and that made me chuckle a little bit, because it's true, there was a story floating around, which is a true story, that I ended up on the top of a mountain. A colleague of mine said, you know, have you ever tried to bike down a mountain? I said, no. I said, and he said, oh, it's not scary, we can do it. I said, really, you sure? And he said, yeah, it's no problem. So we rented bicycles. I said, should we get helmets? He said, nah. I said, listen, come on, let's get helmets. So we got helmets, and I think we had some wrist protection, I don't know what. And we took the gondola. You know, it's like serious mountain. This was in Switzerland in the Alps. And we took the gondola up to the top of the mountain, really. And we're up there, and I'm thinking, this might not be such a great idea. Anyways, we leave the gondola, and this guy is like, okay, so I see you down there. And he starts, and I try to follow him, and I'm just braking because it's so steep. And I'm thinking, this is really not a good idea. I turn the first corner, and I see him tumbling. Falling, he broke his collarbone.
Oh.
Yes, it's not even a funny story. I mean, now it's funny because he survived and he's still playing. But But so that's the story you might have heard about. So no, I don't enjoy bicycling down mountains. Maybe I enjoyed walking around on top of a mountain, and I can enjoy bicycling, but I don't think I should combine the two ever again.
Thank you so much.